My first lesson in radio was how to say the letter W. I had just started at Q98 WQSM in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I got my first couple hours of trying it out, and my boss hauled me into his office and he said, "Megan, the letter is W, not W." And I was embarrassed because I had a degree in theater. I'd been a professional actor. I'd done speech and debate in high school, and I didn't know how to say one of the letters of the alphabet. I said, "W, got it. Okay, got you, boss. I'm good." And he said, "You know, while you're here, Megan, there's a few other things I need to explain to you about radio since you're new to it. Number one, no one actually wants to hear you talk, so shut up and play the music, all right?" "Okay, all right. W, shut up. Got it." He said, "Also, caller number 10 isn't always the winner. So our demographic at Q98, an adult contemporary station, was women 18 to 45. He said, "So, you know, go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But when you get to the caller number 10, don't tell them they're caller number 10. Say, 'Hey, who's this on the line?' And if it's a man, tell them, 'I'm sorry, we gotta try again later,' because you need a woman to be the winner. So that's who caller number 10 is." It doesn't seem very fair. "It's radio, Megan. Welcome to it." "Okay, all right, got it. Caller number 10, W, shut up." He said, "And also, Megan, you are paid to play the music on the list. I don't care how much you hate R. Kelly's 'I Believe I Can Fly,' play it. And quit trying to spin Crash Test Dummies. It's not on the list." "Got it." And I was good at taking notes because I had come from theater. When I first graduated from college, I worked as a stage manager at a regional theater in my hometown. And then luckily I got out of that so I could be an actor in a touring children's theater production. It was two of us in a white kidnapper van going from cafetorium to cafetorium, where it was always Salisbury Steak Day. And we performed two 45-minute versions of Robin Hood and the Greek myths. Just me and my partner, hundreds of miles a day, crisscrossing the Southeast. This guy wasn't much of a talker. He preferred to spend the evenings drinking a 40 of malt liquor and then going for like a 30-mile bike ride. So it's just me, mostly. And in one of these 300-mile days, I started to think, you know, I don't know that I'm cut out for the theater life. I mean, even if I had a better role, and there are better roles, and if I stayed in better hotels, and there's a lot better hotels than the ones we're staying at, which had low weekly rates, and even if I had an audience who used full-size toilets, I still don't know that this is what I want to do. And as I'm thinking about this on this long drive, the only thing that's keeping me company is NPR. I'm listening to that, and I'm going from public radio station to public radio station, and I hear Terry Gross so much, I think I can be Terry Gross. "Hey, Terry Gross, how are you?" "That's a great question. I love that. Yeah, I'm interested, too. Yeah." And I'm like, I can do this. God damn it, I can do this. This is a role I was born to play. Listen to me, yes. And it forms in my mind, yes, I can do this, because even more, these hosts, they get to use their own words. And quite frankly, I'm kind of tired of following someone else's script over and 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 over. So I started to think, maybe it's time for me to go back home and try a different career. I'm 23 years old. I'm going to start over again. Already. And there was one other thing. I was in love. When I was working at the regional theater, I fell for a cool younger guy who was the assistant tech director. And while I was on this tour with my silent, heavy drinking, heavy biking partner, I thought to myself, I could have more love in my life. I could really deal with this. And so when I got back home, I found out that another friend of mine who had worked at that regional theater had just left to go to work for Q98 WQSM. And he said, "You know, Megan, you should totally do this. You can do the voice. You can do the thing. I'll put in a word for you. Maybe you can work weekends." He put in the word. I worked weekends. I learned how to say W. We're in business. I made $6 an hour. And I did have a chance, though. So like being on the air, that's not necessarily what's fun or money-making. The big money in commercial radio is the remote broadcast. This is when you got to take the station van down to some godforsaken car dealership and spend 3 hours, twice an hour, saying, "Hey, everybody, come on down to Lafayette Ford. I'm down here today, and I've got the prize wheel. You can have CDs or T-shirts. And come on down, check out our great deals on probes, escorts, and the brand new 4x4 Bronco. Q98, hot fun in the summertime." Yeah, yeah. You clap, but you didn't go. I was there all by myself for 3 freaking hours on the hot asphalt, sweating like a pig. I gave away no prizes. It just had to sound like it was fun because, you know, caller number 10 isn't. Then fun things aren't. This was what radio was. And I started to think, maybe I'm not cut out for this role either. But I got a little bit of a break. The evening DJ left to go become a club DJ. He is now the top DJ in Boston, by the way. So some people hit it. I did not. But I got the chance to do overnights because everything shifted up. And by overnight DJ, this did not mean that they were looking for the next Wolfman Jack to come and rock the Sand Hills from midnight to 6. They did not want that. They just wanted to make sure that I had a finger that I knew how to use. Because Q98 was a 100,000-watt station in the middle of the Sand Hills. It was the biggest broadcaster, and it was the EAS station, the Emergency Alert System. So other stations in town, they were going to waste money having a living person overnight. You could just automate it. But since Q98 was the EAS station, if something happened, some disaster befell the Piedmont of North Carolina, someone had to be able to hit the button to take over all the signals and send the emergency information. That was it. That's all. That's the only reason I was there, was just to push a button. I could maybe use my elbow if I was eating a sandwich. You know, I had a little freedom with it. And so I began my career in radio from midnight to 6, all by myself in this station. It had both an FM and an AM, and I would wander the halls. I was the ghost in the machine. And in fact, I didn't even have to actually be in the booth to announce the songs or forward promote Jewel or backsell Celine Dion or let everyone know that Dishwalla's got Counting Blue Cars coming up next at 2:15. Didn't have to do any of that. I just put it all on the computer, automated it, and then I spent the rest of the time sitting in my boss's office trying out this newfangled thing called the internet. And I was on Yahoo. That was about it. But I was Yahoo, so I would surf Yahoo. I'd eat Lean Cuisine microwave meals, and I would wait for the time to pass before I could leave. I made sure that disaster didn't go unnoticed. I did my job. And I was very much by myself. And I didn't think anybody even cared because I had like 15 listeners. I was really big with the convenience store clerks because they knew they weren't alone. So they sometimes would call and be like, how are you doing? I'm fine. Okay, you know, just glad to know you're here. I'm glad to know you're there too. Some of us are awake. My biggest fans, though, were the boys at the glue factory. They loved me. They love my voice. And they called up one day, the first time, and they said, hey, we're down here at the glue factory, and we're all taking bets. We want to know what you look like. Which is really mean to ask of someone who works in radio. I had a face for radio. That's why I went into it. People hear your voice. They come up with ideas. I told them what they wanted to hear. I said, well, I'm 5'11". I've got long blonde hair. I've got blue eyes. And I can hear the guy relaying it to everyone else at the glue factory. She says she's blonde. Oh, God, she's got blue eyes. I said, yes. And actually, my real name isn't Megan Jackson. No? What's your real name? My real name is Christy Brinkley. Oh, man, you're pulling our leg. Yeah, I'm just teasing you guys. But I was so starved for human contact because by this time, I'm working all night, I'm sleeping all day, and my boyfriend has transferred to a university an hour and a half away, so I am alone in my hometown with nothing but the boys at the glue factory to keep me company. So I'm trying to keep them on the line. They have a very short break in the glue factory. It's not much better than a chicken processing plant. And I'm just like trying to ask questions. How'd you get into glue manufacturing? What do you like? What's an interesting thing in your job? And just reaching for something, kind of half joking, I say, when do the horses come in? And they say, oh, they come in on Thursdays. So I don't know if I'm cut out for this. But then, Mother Nature came to my rescue. In September of 1996. Hurricane Fran hit. Yes. Hurricane Fran was a Category 3 storm, bigger than Hugo, bigger than Andrew, packing winds of 115 miles an hour, barreled down the East Coast, and landed at Cape Fear, North Carolina, right there at Wilmington. Fayetteville is on the Cape Fear River, and I don't think I need to draw you a map to figure out they're connected. So that hurricane hit Cape Fear and just started running up the warm river. And I got called in early, 9 o'clock at night. I had to wake up. Ugh. And I got in, and it was totally different. It was different than I had seen it. There were people. Lots of people. People and Krispy Kreme donuts and coffee, and everyone's running around, and there's energy, and it's important. And so as the FM side is still spinning the hits and the AM side is still having the talk, they're coming in constantly with updates and reports. Okay, we've got some emergency shelters coming up. We've got it right now. It's coming. It's about 37 miles southeast. And we've got these updates going until the power went out. More than 1 million people lost power. But this station, being an EAS station, had the generator. Other radio stations were falling off the air, but we had the generator, we stayed, we had the power, and it was time. It was time to push the button. It was my whole job, you know, to go and push the button and make everybody hear the EAS. I thought, oh my God, I'm gonna get to do it. And then the engineer comes in and says, oh, hey, Megan, I pushed that button for you. You can just keep on going. So I'm pushing the button, but it has gotten so bad. The winds are picking up so much, and it's getting so dangerous. And the thing about hurricanes, especially on the East Coast, is, I mean, people have hurricane parties. They'll drink, and they'll laugh at the winds, like, oh, we laugh you away. But sometimes it's really real, and this was really real. And the news director made the call. He was like, nope, forget it. We're blowing out all programming. We're going wall-to-wall Fran coverage. We're going to simulcast AM, FM. Let's move it. I got so excited. Something's happening. And so everybody comes in. It's wall-to-wall. It's newscasts. The reporters are running. They're, you know, ripping stuff off the wire, waving it. I've got updates. You know, oh, we've got updates. And I know that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people listening. So this is real radio until the storm gets close enough that the AP wire goes down. The AP wire is everything. That's news. If you don't have the wire, you don't have news. How can you be a news station if you don't have news? And the reporters are freaking out. They're calling up all the TV stations. The TV stations are saying, we're in the same boat. None of us know what's going on here. And the news director is sweating bullets now because how do you go on the air when you're the emergency alert system and tell people, we don't know what's going on? And the people who are on the air supposed to be filling are kind of running out like, okay, so we're just going to go over one more time that report we gave you 5 minutes ago. Yep, just remember, if you remember 5 minutes ago, this was the latest. Like, you know, come on, let's get something. And my heart's racing. I don't know what's going to happen here. And this woman named Wendy Riddle stepped up. I know what to do. Wendy Riddle was a titan of my childhood. She had an afternoon talk show called Sound Off. This is Sound Off. You're on with Wendy Riddle. Talk to me. And, oh, God, I loved her. Everybody loved her. My dad idolized her. My grandfather listened to her. I mean, like, men respected her. She was a woman on the radio. Women didn't get on radio. She was a woman on the radio. She had authority. People believed in her. And on top of that, she was a fabulous singer and actor. So the regional theater I worked at had her picture all over the walls. There she is in Sweet Charity. There she is as Miss Hannigan in Annie, the production I didn't get into, but she was fabulous in it. And she was a reason I thought you could go from theater to radio, because only theater people would think going into radio was a secure career move. Like, it's just, we're not right there. Wendy came in and said, I know what we're going to do. Forget it. We're going on the air. We're going to tell them exactly what's happening. We're going to open the phones. Move. I got it. She sits down. She kind of takes over the mic. And she goes, okay, everybody. This is the truth. We don't know anything. We're as blind as you. We're all in this storm together. You are our eyes and our ears. You're our reporters right now, everybody. If you've got a phone line, let us know where you are. Let us know what you see. We're going to piece it together. We're going to do this together. Phones are open. Go for it. And the calls started coming in. People were hiding in their bathtub with mattresses over them. I'm in my bathtub and I don't know what to do. She said, okay, we've got some tips for you. Here we go. This is what you're going to do. You're going to stay in that bathtub. You're going to hide out. You're going to listen to us. We're with you. I don't want to get off the phone. You have to get off the phone, ma'am. We have to hear from other people, but we know you're there. Who are your neighbors? Okay, all right, John, Joe, Sarah, you heard your neighbor, she's in trouble, you can't get to her, don't go outside now, but go check on her as soon as it passes, okay? Honey, we're watching out for you, get off the phone. Next. And she just like moved through it, you know, done, bun level, Spring Lake, Red Springs, you're on the air. Let's talk about this. Sideways rain, people couldn't see their neighbors. In the middle of talking to us, people would see trees snap. Well, the storm is really, oh my God, the tree snapped, it's flying by. I mean, you couldn't have asked for more riveting radio. I was thrilled. And finally, after a couple hours, Wendy's like, hoarse, like, okay, you're on the air. We're still working through the hurricane. And get off the air, Wendy. Get off the air. Put other people on. And so everybody, all the hosts are coming in until it comes down to me. That is how bad it was. That's how long the storm went on. I go on. Okay. You're on the air in the middle of Hurricane Fran. I'm here for you. Just go ahead and tell me what you're doing. Yeah, that sounds real scary. Okay, we're going to do this. And you know, luckily, they were with me because we were together. We were together during this hurricane. That was all we had was each other, just voices in the dark. And we knew the storm would pass, and it did. Eventually, Hurricane Fran moved through. It ripped up Raleigh. It tore up Richmond, Virginia. And Hurricane Fran made it all the way to the Canada border before she finally pooped out. And we woke up the next morning to all kinds of devastation. Historic neighborhoods were just torn apart, trees everywhere, water was out, electricity is out. Many people called us frantic because cable is out, the TV is out. Okay, we're gonna get it fixed. Raw sewage overflowed into the Cape Fear River, like water was messed up. It was bad. People needed us. Because that little internet thing, you know, was mostly just dancing viral babies. There was no way to get information. It's hard to remember this, but in 1996, you still couldn't just go and get the information. They needed us. We provided it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved hearing what people needed. We could match people up. Like, okay, we got somebody with a lot of ice over there in Grace Creek. Okay, can everybody get out there and get that? I was so happy. And I thought, this is what I want to do. This is why I went into radio. I'm doing this. I don't care if I'm getting paid $6 an hour. I don't care if I've got to sit at car lots. I'm doing this. I'm going to make my way to that NPR heaven. I'm going to have the coffee cup. I'm going to have the Birkenstocks. I'm going to be talking to people. I'm going to have the voice. I'm going to be soft and smooth. It's going to be fabulous. I'm going to do this. I will do whatever it takes. And I did. And I went on. I did not stay in overnights forever. I became a morning show co-host on WNMB, B105.9, the greatest hits of the 80s, 90s, and today. And I got out of that hell, too, and made it up to WRQM in Rocky Mount, public radio. And then that shut down because we didn't have a good pledge drive. And this happens, people. It happens. And then I finally made it out here to the Northwest, and I got to work for 12 years at a public radio station up in Seattle. I got to do what I wanted. I got to produce stories of real people living real lives. I got to get people talking to one another across boundaries. It was my dream. Until this internet thing got big. Like, it's really big, y'all. And radio just couldn't be the radio that it was anymore. We were running to keep up. We were trying to run and keep up with the speed of Twitter. We were trying to meet people on their smartphones. And listening takes time. Doing this? No time at all. Listening? Ugh. They're just talking. And I found that what I loved to do kept getting cut and cut and cut, and the people who I loved I saw less and less and less until I felt as alone as I did at the overnights. And I realized, I gotta quit. This isn't my job anymore. And so 2 years ago, I quit radio. And it's been a struggle to say, what the hell do I do now? I feel like I lost everything I loved. I love that. And so I've spent 2 years doing this show, working and getting people together to tell stories, to be voices in the dark. And I ask myself, what can I get back that I lost from radio? And I think back to that night with Hurricane Fran. I said, what was it? What was it that I felt then? It wasn't the technology. It wasn't the transmitter. It wasn't, for goodness sakes, the button. What was it that I loved? It was the people. It was the talking. It was the sharing. And so here I am, about 15, 16 years later. I'm actually not making as much as I did at Q98. So I'm glad I couldn't see that part of the future. But I'm back in theater. And that cute younger guy who was the assistant tech director is now my husband, and he's up in the booth right now, and we're doing it again. And I'm back with a fabulous group of people telling stories about things that matter, about making it through really hard times. I got it. I got the job I always wanted. And you guys gave it to me. Thanks.